Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
J. Morris, and you're listening to Cosmos Radio and what we call ACIR Radio. And we are sharing this on TJ Morris ET Radio and everywhere else. So all you guys out there, wherever you are, Spotify, iHeart, Spreaker, Stitcher, FM radio, Booberry, whatever it is, you know we're out there. So thank you for listening. And we're hoping to make history and archive it. So I've created ACO Club, and we're starting this year with American Communications Online, and we're moving all our archives over to my big Amazon web service, which is huge, from all our little blogs that we've had for years. And I've asked a gentleman from Pennsylvania that I got sort of a psychic hit off. I'm not sure. He probably knows a lot more about it than I do. I run mostly logical investigative reports, and I'm going to go into radio with the idea that 8 years experience of just recording people is going to help us in our club. But this gentleman's name is Lon Strickler, and I hope I'm saying that right. And he is an American, born in the USA. I'm promoting American Communications Online with him as the ACO Club. And he's agreed to join me on one of my radio shows this week. But I wanted to get to know him a little better and differently, because sometimes, I mean, I have plenty of people that get in touch with me in social media to be on my shows, but I'm sort of picky. So Lon said he would sort of help me. We're going to do those that are career people and those like professionals and those that are hobbyists. And I'm going to get him to educate me, because he's been doing this a lot longer than I have. So Lon, would you like to introduce yourself for me, please?
Yeah, my name is Lon Strickler. I'm a Fortune researcher, author, and writer at the Phantoms and Monsters blog. And I'm also a host at Arcane Radio. Now, I've been a Fortune researcher. Oh, my God. It's been a long time. But I'd say I've been involved with the paranormal for about 40 years now. And the blog started in 2005 and has steadily grown in popularity and read daily by tens of thousands of paranormal enthusiasts and investigators. My research and reports have been featured on hundreds of online media sources. Several of these published reports have been presented on various television segments, including the History Channel's Ancient Aliens, Sci-Fi's Paranormal Witness, Fact or Fake, Paranormal Files, and Destination America's Monsters and Mysteries in America. And I've been interviewed on several radio broadcasts, including multiple appearances on Coast to Coast AM. And I was also featured on Monsters and Mysteries in America for the Sykesville Monster episode. I've written 7 books. And like I said before, I'm currently a host of Arcane Radio.
Awesome. Well, I hope I can get you on some of my radio shows, or we're thinking about doing our own 24/7. If I can get people from around the world, like I've done before with other radio stations, or we may just use an auto DJ, but we're working on that in Texas, California, and Florida. So it'd be great to add Pennsylvania, but, let's see if we can do a little bit of background on you. And you know, I'm going to do a sort of a convoluted version of you. We'll try to watch your time and tell me when you need to, chop it into segments, because we can do like an oral history like I do for Jan Aldrich and UFO Association. And I have an alien contact organization with Janet Carol Lusson. And then I have Ascension Center. It's Ace Metaphysical with a metaphysician, Tommy Hawksblood, in Hawaii on another island. And let's see, Now, Tony is in Texas, and he wants to do mostly politics and editorial. But let's set up you Paranormal 40 and expert, if you don't mind. I've got Daryl Sims in charge of our alienology. What would we call your division or department that you would be an expert? We're separating paranormal now, you know, like phenomenology and cosmology. Where do we get started with you? For right now, you call yourself a Fortean researcher.
Right. Under
paranormal.
And that kind of covers a lot of different things. I call myself a paranormal investigator researcher for a long time, but basically being a Fortean researcher, it kind of encompasses a lot of different aspects of the paranormal. And quite frankly, in my research and in the cases I'm involved with, there always seems to be a connection between the different genres of the paranormal. There's a lot of connections, say, between cryptids and UFOs and even spirits. So I kind of do a lot of different things.
So we could, I don't want to offend you or any of your listeners, but could I safely say that you could be a part of our spiritual science community? Would that be a proper term?
Yeah, that'd be fine.
Okay. Well, some people take offense, and some don't. So I'm always trying to figure out, because what I've seen in radio, at least, and on YouTubes and these TED Talks, is they're doing their best to keep science separate from world religions and ancient mysteries. And when I went to Chicago in 2016 to help Marta Thomas with doing our first global pyramid conference and her people getting them together, it was like they couldn't mesh everything together. But they said, when I showed up, she looked at me and said, "So we're doing this." And she was a UFO professional investigator, but she didn't want to deal with the UFO portion. She said, "No, we're not going to talk UFOs." And I was like, "Well, why am I here?" She said, "We're going to do pyramid." She says, "I want you to help me promote pyramidology." And I was like, "Okay." She said, "Well, you believe in them. You've got one on your leg and you wrote a book." I'm like, "Okay." So fortunately, we both knew Sam Osmanagić of the Bosnian pyramids, and I still hadn't gotten my book written. So let's look at who you are and how you got into this for all the young people, like my 20-year-old grandson in there. How do you get into this? Let's go back to, like, I got a hit, psychic hit on, for some reason, wondering why I saw you in Civil War, and you said, "Yeah." Automatically, I was shocked the heck out of me, because I wasn't trying to do a psychic hit. I wasn't doing a reading or trying to get him to pay me money. Okay, it's nothing like that. I just got this hit, and in my mind, I get these visions, and I saw him in the Civil War, but I couldn't make out which side he was on. So, but he automatically said you were 20-something. So tell us about you as a little boy and how you got into Gettysburg, and why would I pick up and you just automatically plump give me an answer? That spooked me out.
Well, I was born and raised near the Gettysburg battlefield. I spent a lot of summers as a kid on the battlefield itself. This one particular day, I used to get on my bike and ride to Gettysburg. And this one day, I was eight years old. I was in an area of the battlefield that's called Death Valley. Now, that area in particular is between the wheat field, Devil's Den, and Little Round Top. It's a valley where there was a lot of action on the second day of the battle. So I was on my bike, and all of a sudden, it's almost like a door opened, because I started seeing apparitions, hearing gunfire, cannon fire, smelling gunpowder, the whole nine yards. And this went on for several minutes and then suddenly just shut down. Now, by that time, I knew that I had some abilities, but I wasn't really quite sure what it was. It's not like I lived in a haunted house or anything like that. But I could pick up on spirit energy. So I eventually learned through a regression that I did fight on the Union side, and I was at Gettysburg as a member of the 20th Maine. And I have always been attracted to that one part of the battlefield where the 20th Maine Monument is. And if you, of course, if you know the history of the unit, that on the second day of the battle, they charged down the hill with the bayonets and fought back the North Carolina and Texas troops. It was a long day, a long battle, but very historic day. And that's apparently the unit that I was with. Now, like I said before I even knew any of this, I was attracted to that part of the battlefield. So, after all this happened, and I don't really think my parents had any idea of any of this. I never talked to them about it. And, as I got a little bit older, I started to get involved with helping people that had hauntings. Now, this was back in the mid-70s. So, this isn't a time when, the paranormal was kind of the thing to do. I mean, people kind of looked at you like you're nuts when you told them you were involved with the paranormal. But I did that for a while. Then, as life goes on, you get married, you have kids, you start working, and you kind of get a little bit out of that. But my whole perspective on the paranormal changed in May of 1981 is when I had a Bigfoot encounter while I was fishing on the South Patapsco River near Sykesville, Maryland. And after that day, I became very involved with the cryptid aspect of the paranormal. And that's basically what I've been doing a lot of since then. I've had other encounters. I've also helped people with hauntings in the meantime. And it got to the point where all those years I was taking reports, talking to people, keeping notes of cases I was working on. And it eventually accumulated into when I started my blog in 2005, and I started looking into other people's reports. Of course, with the advent of the internet, it was much easier to do this. And it kind of snowballed from there, and that's where we are at this point.
Well, can you confirm or deny, I don't know how you want to say this, that you have never talked to me, or have we ever talked, or did you know me or anything about me or anything that would make me think that you and I are connected in this reality?
No, I knew you were on LinkedIn as someone who was, associated me with LinkedIn, but you and I never talked. We never communicated until the day you contacted me.
So what is that? Because that's what I'm studying. I like humanity and human behavior and neuropsychology, phenomenology, but my specialty was as an investigator, was just getting the facts for rich attorneys on cases. And the offshore oil rigs, even death, accidents, I worked mostly personal injury and maritime law and arson, fraud, subrogation, fires. So when I was a well-paid investigator before I went in the military, but as a child, I went to Jackson. I lived in Monroe and went across to Vicksburg. And I started crying because I was having visions. Of course, my mother was like a psychic, but she would never admit that. I just know that she died eating pits, peach pits or whatever that stuff was inside there. And she got deathly ill, her and her brother both. And she had like an out-of-body experience, but I didn't learn that till she was in the late 60s and Stanton Friedman was calling me. And then I got to be on a ABC taping, and she took the call. So I sat down with her at the table and asked her if she remembered me, you know, going back in Vicksburg. I said, "Mom, you remember when you talked to me about crying and how you were really concerned about me with my dad? We were having a family picnic in Vicksburg, and I was seeing all these people, and I'm like, I see dead people, Lon. Okay, like you did." And she didn't understand it, and she was just really shocked. I said, "Do you remember that?" She said, "Yeah." And she said, "That's when they were putting I-20 through, and they were moving some of the big stones, and we didn't understand why that upset you so much. It was the Vicksburg battlefield, and it just, you know, they had to give up on their picnic and take me home. That, I mean, I was like having some episode or something." So that's something that's similar, you know, in remembrance. And then when I went to Gettysburg as a truck driver. So what I'm looking for is that, what is that, I call it spirit, I guess. I can't find any other name for the connection to it. It's like, if you talk neurologically, they'll tell you that we have electrical, like beta, alpha, theta, delta, gamma, sigma, del, you know, the seven levels of humanity, or the seven vibrations. And you know, we have do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. That's eight. We use those in music. So do you have any people that in your Freudian area of expertise that study that spirit and energy, that I don't know what you'd call it, but it's like you can see it and feel it, but maybe you can't really touch it, but some people get hits, and that's what I got on you. So yeah. I don't know. Can we give that a new name? Do you already have one?
I was a trained remote viewer.
A what?
A trained remote viewer.
A remote viewer.
I was trained by a person who worked for MI5 in her public career until she retired. She took me under her wing.
Are you speaking intelligence community of the UK, like MI6?
Yes. And she taught me spontaneous remote viewing or controlled remote viewing. And, you know, I actually did a year of training. We actually did it over Skype over a year. And we got involved with working cases primarily in the UK of hauntings, you know, haunting cases, all kinds of different types of hauntings and attachment cases. And it was fairly successful. She would go, her and her group would go on site, and I would be connected with them on the computer through Skype, and I would do a remote view as they were working the case. And we were fairly successful for a while. I mean, we did it for about 4 or 5 years, and you know, life happens and you got to do other things, but it's, I do use it occasionally for cases. I worked with a group in Australia for a while who has helped me with my personal cases, who have done remote views to help me with more information on other cases that I've been involved with. As well, I'm also, I've got several clients who I've helped over the years who have had hauntings in their home, and I've done remote sessions to try to alleviate the hauntings and the attachments in their location. And, you know, I've been involved with that now for, I guess, about 10 years.
Wow. Okay. Well, I didn't know remote viewing was out there and all these groups. I feel like I've been on another planet, to be honest with you, but all I did was I had a deep investigation, deep problems at the government level, and then was assigned a case. And then, I had to work on it roughly 20, 30 years. But anyway, it's coming to a different level. You've worked on cases like tier 1, 2, 3, or been like a legal investigator or a private investigator. Have you done investigations? Are you saying remote viewing, like paid informant or paid investigator or researcher?
No, this has always been private.
Oh, it's private hobby.
This has always been between me and the client.
Okay.
I have never pressured anybody to pay me for any of my services. This has mostly been all voluntary.
Yeah.
But I have helped a lot of people, and in fact, I've helped some people who are very well known. So, yeah, it's kind of been a private thing.
Nice.
I don't talk a whole lot about it, but it's, you know, it's just part of what I do.
Nice. Well, I guess I can keep my ACIR radio going with people like you then, because originally it was assured confidential investigative reports. And you can understand then, I guess, at my spiritual level, that there's some people that want assistance from people that have had out-of-body near-death or actually feel like they died or had seen the other side, but we don't really know how to address it. We always get laced in with, I see dead people, our spirits, or the spiritual world with Houdini and, you know, I don't know, War of the Worlds kind of things, if you know what I mean. So I'm not sure what it's called, but in science, they pretty much refer to it as phenomenology. And I used to be told I had ESP, you know, growing up. But what is that called now if it's not extrasensory perception? Do you know?
They still call it extrasensory perception. But, you know, it's kind of broken up into a lot of different parts now. Some are clairvoyant, some are clairsentient, some are able to do specific things. I consider myself more of a intuitive. When I sense spirit energy, but how I sense it is in my mind's eye, I see certain colors, and that's how I interpret what I'm what I'm in the presence of. And over the years, I've been able to determine what colors associate to what types of energy. And using that as a primer when I start to do the investigation and using remote viewing techniques, I'm usually able to pinpoint what's going on. And on occasion, I have done clearings that way as well.
Okay, now I've done clearings that my daughter did because I grew up being curious in whatever this was, and I was very curious about Houdini, and I read a lot of books, but I was looking for probably the same thing Houdini was, I guess. It's the other side, or how are people, you've experienced something in life, and I had, and orb people, if you want to say, or people that have, like I thought I was drowning and they pulled me up out of the water, or with extraterrestrials. So I'm always looking for like angels, extraterrestrials, spirits, orb beings, those type of energies, because so many people call them different things. So in a way, you've sort of been on the same path, haven't you? I don't know. Maybe Gettysburg got you started looking for those beings, or.
I don't know. I mean, I think the situation with Gettysburg kind of helped me define a bit more of what I was able to do. You know, I still spent a lot of time on the battlefield. I moved back up here again, so I live near Gettysburg currently again, and I do spend a lot of time there. There's a lot of different things that you do pick up on. It's interesting being out there when other people are there and experiencing what they see or how they react. But, you know, because there's so much trapped energy in that one specific area, it is kind of like it's almost like a laboratory for paranormal activity. And, you know, I've always been attracted to these locations where there's been a lot of death or a lot of strife, and battlefields are particularly ripe with that. I've also done work at Antietam as well. So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of like I said before, it's like a lab, and you kind of go there and pick up on a lot of different things. But I will say, I think being on the battlefield has kind of helped me define what abilities I do have and how I can use them.
So we could say safely say that people like you and me, I'm really looking, and I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. I'm really looking for how you and I came together. And we're always looking for, you know, who are we, why are we here, and where will we go when we leave the planet, so to speak. Have you heard that, right? Mm-hmm. The main question is, I think somebody said the biggest question you'll ever ask yourself is where you go when you leave here. But I don't know. I guess it's some people that are faith, they have faith, or they're believers in spirit. And then there's others that scientifically have to prove it with sight, but a peer review, or where something you can experiment and do it over and over again. And it's really a philosophy, but we call it a science because we think if we can do it, then it must be real, right? Or if somebody else can do it and repeat the situation. And all that, I understand, came from philosophy way back in Roman times or whatever, all the way back to Aristotle and all that. But, you know, I'm looking for that common thread. And then everyone thinks that they have their own truth. But I'm learning that memories and perceptions aren't necessarily the same thing. So I would like to build a wiki with you, if you don't mind, or one that we could use among people learning how we're developing the skills and how we brought all our libraries together. And like you said, defining, well, you can say remote viewing, and maybe that breaks down. Being a psychic, a clairvoyant, sentient, audience. I forgot all, but we used to use clairvoyant. I've forgotten all of them. I've written them a million times. Clairsentient. But anyway, basically you can feel it with your hairs, your primordial instincts. Go up on the back of your neck or on your arms. What do y'all call that with your group, or how you've been educated?
Well, my group my current group is not necessarily into that part of what we do. We're mostly into cryptid investigations and you know, other strange phenomena, unexplained phenomena. But what you're talking about, I believe, is perception and how each person interprets perception. Each person has their own perception. I have talked to a lot of people over the years who perceive energy, perceive spirits. It's all energy, but they all perceive it in a different way. Like I said earlier, I perceive in colors. My mind's eye is very, very open all the time. I see. I'm able to see remotely. I can see places remotely. When I work with clients, when I'm talking to them, either on Skype or on the telephone, I can usually perceive where they are, what they're doing, what they're thinking, their feelings and such. And that's just something I've been able to do. And, you know, that's my own personal perception. But, you know, I guess, you know, everybody has their own.
All right. Well, did you write a book on intuitive perception at all yet, or manifesting, or?
No, my friend Brett has been trying to talk me into doing a book about mysticism. She calls me a mystic. I don't know if I am one, but no, I've only written about cryptids, and my last book was about alien disclosure and abduction phenomena.
Well, I work with mystics, oracles, psychics, sages, seers, and I've been called a mage. But, you know, it's because of the stuff I study. But being an investigator, that is a paying bona fide job, right? I made $5,000 per case and $55 an hour back in the 80s, you know, before the government snapped me up. But I was out of country being paid. But the people that used me could afford it. They had money. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the people, at least here where I grew up in the South, we all sort of thought it was normal to see spirits or to feel ghosts. And the when you go to where they bury dead people, what are those called?
Cemetery? You know,
cemetery. But you know, when you're grown up and you're told we treated cemeteries with respect, and we didn't, you know, we knew where the headstone was and that it was always at the head, not the foot. So is that what you were raised? I mean, in Pennsylvania, right?
Well,
that's where you grew up. You grew up in Pennsylvania?
I grew up in Pennsylvania. I was raised in a family that was very conservative. My family lineage goes back to Amish on both sides.
Wow.
We've had powwowers in our family. I very well know a lot of what that whole folk art of healing is. I've been involved with some of it, though I was never trained by anybody. So I'm very aware of it. I don't know if that has had any influence on me personally. It may have. I mean, it may be something that was passed down to me that, you know, through family, but I really don't know.
Some people say it's in our DNA, but I think that's yet
it
to
may
be.
But I don't know. I think most of what we, you know, I believe every person has some type of intuitive ability.
Right.
You can call it psychic, but I think it just depends how open the person is to actually using it, how they develop it, and if they're willing to be open with others and help them by using it. That's something that I do. I mean, I don't necessarily get into a case, or have in the past gotten into a case that I'm out for compensation. I'm just doing it to help them, or they ask to help. And that's the way I've always been. I mean, I just feel it's part of what I am. And that's why I have done it over the years. So it's culminated into a lot of very interesting friendships and relationships over the years.
Well, the way that, because I was raised in the South and spiritual and in Monroe, and of course we had New Orleans and all the world religions and, but you know, the French Creole, and you've heard of Voodoo and all these other Santeria and all these other. So we got a combination of all that, you know, with me growing up, and then we moved to Houston, and then I realized how international the world was, right? Living near Houston and Seaport, so to speak, you know, but so many, the Japanese had their little area, Chinese had theirs, the Mexicans theirs, Filipinos, you know, and then make these little clusters of Houston. I'm sure it's still that way, probably a lot more, because that was in the 60s, and I met with Saudi Arabians, broke my tooth at the Warwick Hotel. I was a dancer at the time. But even then, I could sense people, but we didn't talk about it. But the government recruited me in May 10th, 1967, because of my abilities, I believe. I can't prove it to you or anybody else, but people, you know, recruiting you in high school because I was twirling fire batons at my high school and machetes. And the way that I understood was men in black, so to speak, you know, they came in black, and one of them got me out of the movie theater. But I believe it was based on what I could perceive or touch and feel, because how I researched it as a kid was this girl came out to get me to talk to her father in the stands because they had heard about us practicing at school, and it got around school that we were going to twirl, you know, fire batons and machetes that night, right? Mm. So, we did occasionally, but it was a big deal until they had to make us not do it anymore. It was causing a thing with the local Houston fire department or something, something to do with fire. It was turning the lights out, I think. But anyway, so one of these guys came and asked me if I'd like to work for the government. So that's how I wound up, you know, being a bona fide investigator. But Men in Black, so to speak. And then they pulled us out of a James Bond movie. My husband worked at NASA, but at the time he had 5 scholarships. So I was wondering if you have any knowledge, government groups of any type in intelligence ever approached you?
Yeah.
Oh, well, let me hear your story.
I can't really talk about it. I was involved with a particular agency who was interested in something I was involved with, but, you know, I don't know if it became classified. I really don't know that, but I just know I've never really talked about it.
Right. Well, they would have told you if it was, well, you weren't a government contractor or government.
No. This was something I did voluntarily.
Yeah, I was both. I was in uniform and out of uniform and trained to GS status as well. But it all became because I didn't understand signing the paperwork in 67, but I grew into various divisions of departments inside the government before I retired in 2017. So now I feel more freely. I don't think that when I had my company as ACIR, Assured Confidential Investigative Report, you of course know just out of confidentiality with a person if they ask you. It's like a medical or a HIPAA law. So it's a moral law, right? If they come to you, especially those that are very well known or have reputations, they don't want people to know they believe in spooks or ghosts or, you know,
That's always been a policy of mine. No matter the type of investigation I'm doing, it's always confidential. And unless they give me permission to go beyond and release their name or release some of the information. But for the most part, and this is something I've always stressed with people I work with, that, you know, the client confidentiality is probably the biggest priority in what I do. And, you know, I've always gone by that, and it's kind of given me the ability to receive more cases as word of mouth goes by, because people do realize that, you know, you will not talk about them personally and disclose any information that they don't want done. So, you know, that's always been my number one priority, to keep things confidential.
Right. So there's that level of just doing it as a human out of morals. And then a lot of times with the government, if you've got a need to know or a confidentiality agreement, they may have you sign that. But in the military, a lot of times you'll be working in another area or on what they call temporary duty orders. And then you may go do something never knowing what it is. You don't know till you get there, and then you're involved. And then after the fact, we would brief people and then tell them that they can't talk about it and tell them who they were working with, or you were working, you know, affiliate or blah, 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 right? You may be in a uniform, but working with the intelligence community. But you started right off that you said you worked with MI5. So, but that was.
Well, I didn't work with MI5. The person who trained me did work with MI5.
Oh, okay.
When she worked. I mean, when she retired, she, you know, her and I kind of hit it off, I guess, spiritually. And she was a psychic as well. And, you know, she decided that she would train me to be a coordinate remote viewer. And that's how that came about.
Nice. So you use coordinates like they do in the Army, or used to, or a lot of do you know any of the guys that were in Stargate?
Yeah.
You do, Russell Targ.
Yeah, I knew a few of the people. I was, when I lived down in Maryland, I didn't live too far from Fort Meade, so I was able to associate with a few people that were in that program earlier. Wow. You know, they never really acknowledged it after, you know, it came up with you know, the MK Ultra and then the Spygate.
Oh, yeah.
But I was able to converse with a few of the people involved.
Yeah, I think those are completely different programs. Now, they may have crossed over in a time.
Oh, there was a crossing.
Oh, was there?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, I didn't know from the 60s, 70s, and 80s. I wasn't in the MK Ultra, but I did study some cases in Canada. With a gentleman that was known for doing that. And there's some cases out there still open for money, so to speak. So I wish everybody well on that. But I never wanted to get close to MK Ultra. Now I've had people on radio shows that do that, or have meetup groups on some other radio shows that do it. Maisha Johnston, do you know her?
No.
Oh, okay. See, we can do stuff and not ever know each other. And this is what's amazing me, because it's, you would think it would be a closed community, but it's so closed, we don't even know each other. So maybe that's, I don't know if that's good or bad. Well, another thing you mentioned, now, if you don't mind, I don't know if you're taking notes, but I don't think you'll have time to go back and listen to this, but, you know, we can build an oral history, and that's what I like to do as an investigator archivist, and build ACIR radio with groups that feel like they're contributing to the oral history of who they are in our Who's Who directory, and how we can train people in what we do. So, you know, we're told to live 120 years in the Bible. I don't know if I'll make it. I don't know if you'll make it. But those of us that have faith that there's spirits out there, I think we have a little more faith and hope, because, you know, if you're, let's say you're in a severe accident underground. My brothers were like that, working, laying pipes, right, in Houston and stuff. And one got down in the machine. One did a machine, and one got down and did the fancy welding and stuff. But you can get trapped. But sometimes only hope and faith you've got is in humanity and God to pull you out. And I'd hate to be in a position, and I've been close to there with people. I've been in some severe situations, including death and dying, where if you don't have that, I don't know how people survive it when they don't believe in anything after. So that's sort of a mission of mine. I believe alien civilizations exist, and that's ergo my ACE for, and then I have Ace Metaphysical Institute. But with you, ACO Club, I believe it needs to be something not just metaphysical and not just UFOs and alien contact, because I had a Bigfoot experience while I was driving a big truck, and not one, but twice. One, when I was getting up, I had a CDL out of Kentucky. I started in Oklahoma, then went to Texas and drove for FFE American Eagle, and I went to US Express and Covenant. And but I was pulling out I had one of my husband at the time, I had pulled out of Kentucky, Beaver Dam, Kentucky, and went down over to the Missouri-Arkansas line, pulling out there, and it was late at night. Sometimes you have to live at night, you know, it doesn't matter what you're picking up, it just depends on your time, and I happened to be able to go through home from, like, Pennsylvania, New York area. We did a lot of New Jersey deliveries for the government, but this was crackers or something. I don't know why. Normally, I wouldn't remember, but it was like something weird, like, it was off-the-wall leave at night food product or something. I think it had a shelf life or something. So I had to go, and when I was pulling 1:30 or 2 in the morning, the light shined over in the dark, and I saw this tall, it looked like a tall, I mean like 8 feet or so tall, so that it caught my eye, and I asked a couple other guys if they saw it, and they didn't see it, and that really upset me, because this, what I would call a Bigfoot, but I saw a short, you know, after I saw him, I looked to see what I could see there. And there was a short, like a, I want to say a woman, I don't know, but this is how my mind perceived it. We'll just talk perception, was that the, and they're like, well, the lights shine, cause I was turning from a road to get on the road going towards Little, Memphis. And, I don't think they were supposed to be there, but it was that time of year where they were picking berries off of the fence. I think it was like blackberries or something along a fence line, a smaller one with a smaller one. So to me, now this is what I perceived, that I wasn't supposed to see them. They weren't expecting me at that odd hour, 2:33, whatever. It was one of those where people are asleep and they don't have very much traffic on the road, you know? And I was coming from a off the wall area, Kentucky anyway, down and turning Missouri. And anyway, when I turned, I knew I caught something I wasn't supposed to see. Of course, I was an investigator by trade, but that shocked me because I'd never seen that before. So I got a quick glimpse, but I could sense intuitively that he looked at me and looked at them, and I looked to see what he was looking at. So that's how I figured it out. So my mind and my thoughts were, ah, that's his mate and their little child, our little Bigfoot thingy. So I got on the CB, man, because one was coming up right behind me, and I asked him, and he went the other way towards Chicago. And he said, no. And so, but I had already pulled up, and in the time that I could pull up, shine my lights, and a big truck, you know, when you're sort of had been, you know, like slow, and then you're turning, and it takes you a little while to get around because you're not in any hurry anyway around at night time of night and turning. But it took time to swerve the lights by. But within that time, he had gotten from under that sign over almost to them, and they disappeared. I mean, like, I wasn't supposed to see it. I'm like, whoa, they're gone. By the time I could tell, get the CB down, then the little mic, and ask the guy pulling up behind me if he saw it. I don't know where he came from, and he didn't. And I was like, I think that was a Bigfoot, because I don't know what else to call it. So, anyway, and then later on, I mean, you'd think that's enough, right? But later on, two or three years later, or this, it was, see, I don't know which one was first, because I had two accounts, and it's been many, 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 many years ago. That's the thing about we're not recording memories, folks. That's why, part of why I started doing what I'm doing orally here with Lon. This one was over, I remember it was near a casino, which doesn't make sense. But it was between Little Rock and coming into Memphis. And it was another late, late time at night. And the reason I kept telling myself, you're not going to remember this. You're not going to remember this. You don't even know if this is a memory or perception, you know, that kind of thing. But I saw one alone walking, just walking. It was dark, but it was too tall to be. It wasn't walking like an ape. And it wasn't a bear because it was on two legs. Because I've, you know, as a truck driver, you know, you ain't gonna believe this shit. We have all these stories, right? So nobody's gonna believe you anyway. You know that. But I know it wasn't a bear, and I know it wasn't a man, and it wasn't a gorilla. But your mind tells you, and it was a moonlight. It was a full, like a full moon light off of like a, and I want to say that he was walking near. But not under, and I don't think that other one walked under, but it was enough to let me know. So that's the only thing that keeps me sane is knowing, well, how did you see it at night away that far off of the road, you know, on the other side of the fence line and out in the pasture? But he was all alone. And so that, but I said, well, remember the location. So that's why I say casino, because it wasn't near any casino, but it was like Mississippi. I don't, anyway, but at that time, I'm sure I could find basic area where it was, but nobody cared. You know what I'm saying? And nobody believed you anyway. So I wonder how many people have done that and known that, you know, nobody cares. And when you're a truck driver, we all have these stories because we drive all over the country. I've been in every state in the United States, right? But I remembered those. And then one time I wrote it up for somebody that asked me to. But I don't remember if it was when I was writing for UFO Digest or if I was writing, or I quit writing and did it during radio. But I bet I could find it out there. Do you, where do you put Bigfoot stuff? Did you report yours?
I eventually reported mine to the BFRO after, not long after they had become an organization. And you know, it kind of sat out there in the ether for a long time.
Yeah.
I brought it out when I started writing my blog and started talking about it. And, you know, that's kind of where it happened, but that was like 20 years later.
Well, so don't you think it's odd that we're talking now and we both do radio shows and I haven't been writing on my blog for years. So I'm just, now that my husband died and took up a lot of time, and then my daughter died, and so March 15th will be 1 year, and I've got her, you know, my grandson's living in my living room in there on my day bed, or whatever you call those couches that you can bunk down and an extra mat on them, but it looks like a couch during the day. But anyway, you know, I'm just now deciding that I've had a company for over a year since April 5th, 2018, here in Florida. I moved from Kentucky, where I was driving the big truck, down here. And I had quit, you know, doing investigations, and I've retired from the government officially 2017 on my birthday, I think, how they do it, Social Security. So I put in 50 years, you know, investigations. But now I can do this as a hobby or a profession or both or part-time with people that want to do it professionally or as a hobby. So I'm just starting it, and you're my first person, my first intake. Now, look how strange this is. I left it up to the universe, and you're what was found. And an immediate psychic hit going, tell me something. And you had the first thought was, well, the first thought was, why am I getting in touch with you? But then the psychic hit on the now, I didn't know you were from Gettysburg, but that war, that's a hit, Civil War. And then I didn't know you had a Bigfoot. So now we've got two things. Well, more than that, I'm looking forward to seeing people in the future. What do we really know about each other? And why are we who we are? And why do certain people have certain experiences and others don't? Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I mean, like I said before, I guess each person has their own way of determining that. You know, I have had the ability, or maybe it's coincidental, that I've contacted or been in contact with people who are a lot like me, or who kind of stumble upon me for whatever reason. Maybe that's what happened to you. I don't know.
You really don't? You haven't written a book on that?
Nope. No, I haven't. Either,
but let's do something. There's something here, Lon. I don't know, because, I mean, I watch TED Talks. I watch History Channel. I've ever been to an event was as a consultant on pyramids, where I thought I was going for the UFO MUFON business. So, surprise! So, I mean, you know, the one time I think, oh, I'm going to get involved with the UFO world, you know, because it was close to me retiring, you know. But I was doing radio, TGMRCT radio, to help another friend of mine in Hawaii that was keeping up my Ascension Center for spiritual, we do more, Reiki, how would you say? It's this day and time, they call it like a new age, but it was like I helped endorse chiropractic and yoga and seeing auras and chakra balancing and the realms and teaching, because I learned that on my spiritual path while I was in Hawaii, right? So there's a few little introductions to my spiritual path. So to me, it was like my ministry. I wrote music, and I helped people in the music industry and joined Country Music Association and Broadcast Music Incorporated. And, you know, I did all that, but that was a hobby. But I became a producer with International Bluegrass Music Association and helped the Bill Monroe Foundation. Got one of the first certificates as a plank owner for Bill Monroe Foundation Bluegrass Music. But what I was learning, that when all these different things I was doing, I said, well, let's do them all together. So we had events. So then I became an event planner, an organizer for Ohio County, and we had it at the county fair. So, but we didn't talk about Bigfoot to everybody, but I did get to talk to somebody that called me once, where I was writing for the local newspaper. So I started writing what the people did. And so I formed Ace Folk Life in 2003, and with my husband and mother, because mother was a writer. And I had some people that told me about sitting at the old, they would have these old roads. I don't know if you got them in Pennsylvania, surely like Gettysburg, where they had the old wagon wheels, and then they had where the water, you'd stop and water the horses. And down one of those was on my husband's father's land, 35 acres. And it had a history there, and I got all interested. George Washington, there was all kind of interesting history there. So this family came and told me about watching a Bigfoot. So, you know, I broke down as a truck driver, and they said they saw a UFO over my house every night. And this lady would get up and drink coffee, watch out her window before 5:30 in the morning before dawn to watch this UFO come over my house. And I was like, really? So I thought she was wacko. Turned out she wasn't. She just, because some other people said the same thing. So I don't know, but I didn't really write that down, but I did listen to her story of Bigfoot behind the trees that would be drawn to the music. They were out in this land where the old wagon, she took me to it. I didn't do a full investigation. I just did a on-site, you know, boots on the ground, take me there kind of thing, and saw, and the trees were still there. There's a huge trees where this old coal, the men would come, and there was a bell where you'd ring the bell for food, or if the women were there, knew that had an accident, a coal mine. They're very interesting, but she said that it was common knowledge, but they couldn't talk to them, but they would come up, but they didn't know who they were if they were from another existence, because they could come and go around trees, so they don't know if they're going in the trees or just disappearing or whatever, but they were attracted to the fiddle music, come up to listen to the fiddle music, and I thought that was a curious human kind of thing, that they were real shy or scared, or but the people said in the coal mine business, you know, back in the day when they had wagons, and her parents told, and she was a little girl, she's dead now, but that back in the day, they believed in those, they didn't call them Bigfoot. I don't know what they called them, but they had a name for them. But they didn't, where did the name Bigfoot come from anyway?
That came from a timberman out in the Pacific Northwest who saw several of the tracks, and he referred to it as a Bigfoot. And now, that's how the name caught on.
Oh, because of the foot thing. The Gigantopithecus. Now, is that really like the Yeti story comes from our ET stories? Because in one of my old, I don't know what you call it, memories, perceptions, DNA, I don't know what you want to call it, past lives is the way we say it in the Oracle business. But up in where the flags are, Tibet, I have a past life with a guy that, he doesn't necessarily agree or remember it. So, but I had to tell him because he became a friend of mine in this reality. I didn't have to tell him, but I was compelled. So like I told, I can't explain it. It's like blah, you know, but I know you're not supposed to do that as a psychic reader or anything, but we don't charge for what we know. What we charge for is our time. And then I learned in the government and the entertainment industry, you can charge like $1, $2, or $3 a minute. They used to outlaw it or something in all the states, and then they decided to let it in back in the day when I was teaching it and training. But I was trying to tell him because he hated psychics. He worked with psychics. He wanted to believe them, but he didn't believe them because he was a magician, and all magicians think, you know, you can prove everything like Penn and Teller or something, you know. And he worked in Las Vegas, so he had some ET things he was interested in, but he didn't believe in those either. So he was having a hard time spiritually with his Ekankar background, but they taught him how to leave his body. So he learned how to leave his body and have out of body. So I learned in the last 8 or 10 years that people that want to, but don't, they're sort of like me. We're real skeptics, but I was trying to tell him about these Yeti that in my reality, in this dimension, the history of knowing your history years, hundreds, thousands of years ago, like I have a memory in Egypt too, is the fact that one of my memories was coming down in a UFO and it crashed me with two other guys. And I taught the people, this is just a memory, so I taught people how to put their bodies and take everything out and wrap them in gold, like salt, dry them out and put them in gold. And then wait for us to be rescued. That sounds weird now saying it with you, but that was a Yeti story, which, so I had the word Yeti, but they, to me, they were extraterrestrials because they were there to protect. It was some kind of war going on, but they were up there to protect until the people that we would return, right? So I'm not sure what happened to me after that, but that is a real story in my head, like a episode on X-Files. But that, so I started looking what Yeti meant, like Gigantopithecus. But do you have a team or anybody that works with that group or that, what would you call that, a discipline or?
What's that?
Hobby, right? It's not a profession, right? It's a hobby.
You know, I hate calling it a hobby. I think we're enthusiasts, but we're also those people who want to seek the truth, who want to find out what's really going on. It's almost like a deep-seated obsession, I guess. I don't really call it a hobby.
I'm really having trouble here because I know what people are telling me, that we want to grow our alien contact organization. We want to grow our UFO association. But I'm having all these fights among event planners or events and people that want to get to the brass tacks, and those that want to be like, what's his name? John Lear. And John doesn't do radio anymore, but I remember Art Bell, and he used to write to me. And I don't know why all these people, they were writing to me, right? So it was all the UFO stuff, but a lot of it I couldn't divulge, even to Stan Friedman, you know, because I used to write government. Well, I won't go there. Well, I've already said I'm retired now. I don't see why. You know, investigations, right? Or I would do, well, I've already told you, assured confidential investigative reports, right? So we couldn't talk about it. And so I had met J. Allen Hynek years ago, and he wrote somewhere between Colorado when I was at the Air Force Base there. I believe that's the plane trip, because a German, one of them took me out on the air base to give me my clearance level, Q or above, and then I wound up with Royal 14. But J. Allen Hynek worked with the Air Force, but he met me on an airplane, and he, and I believe it was the year he must have known he had cancer or something. I don't know when he found out. I don't even know that he had cancer. What am I saying? Act like I know. But anyway, I just know he died in 1986. But I was reading a book called Aliens Among Us by Ruth Montgomery. And the reason I remember is because I was embarrassed. It was new out, and I was embarrassed to have it. But he was real interested in that. But he encouraged me. He listened to my story about dying and going to White Sands and seeing extraterrestrials and UFO ships. You know, we call them flying saucers back then. But anyway, he wanted he took my story and told him that he told me about Center for UFO Studies, and he asked me if I would continue his work. And I was like, what the, I'm a government investigator and I'm training, you know, and I just got, you know, I'm uniform and I want to do GS, and I was in a special program, and, you know, I was learning Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines. I was working Joint Chief of Staff and DOJ and working for JAG officers. And what am I going to do? Go chase, you know what I mean? You can imagine, like, yeah, right, you know. But I told him, yeah, when I retire, I'll do that. You get it? So that, I mean, I told him, yeah. And then I'm doing it. So I don't know what I'm doing. So it's like the blind leading the blind. But it's, I think he understood that I'd been, had these things happen. He didn't, we didn't discuss Bigfoot, by the way. We only talked about, you know, me dying as a child with hepatitis, and then dying when I had my fourth child. And he was interested in the orb beings and the grays and the tall whites, and working my family genealogy, and why my, you know, the government and my name Thurmond, and real interesting, because we had like a couple hours or so, I don't know. But he sort of made me realize that no, this is serious. There's something going on, and yada yada, and there's something there, and I'm just going to ask you to please continue to work, but that kind of stuff, you know. But I didn't know it was going to involve Bigfoot, but I don't know that it does, except for that memory. And I don't remember that I had that memory when I met him in the 80s, because on my trip to Hawaii is when I had, like you said, you had a regression, and in that regression I had these memories come back. So tell me about your regression.
Oh, there isn't a whole lot to talk about. It was part of a group of people who got involved with an individual. I don't even remember the woman's name, to be honest. It's been a while back. But no, she told me that she gave me the whole scenario about, you know, past lives, and then this thing up with the 20th Maine came up. It kind of clicked when she told me about it after we discussed and debriefed. But yeah, that kind of clicked with me.
Well, when you feel, you pick up on things, and like you have visions, but usually in a regression, from the ones I know that are professionals, I was taken back by a doctor, PhD for the government, Dr. Laura Sturgis in Hawaii. And I was teaching her psychic classes at the time. She really liked what I did. And she met me at the University of Hawaii and while we were doing holodynamic classes. And she liked me as a president, CEO of a corporation over there. Plus, I worked in investigations. And she just liked me as a person. But mainly, she got interested in me through Cynthia Chu with the Chinese and the Bastard and Reagan and all that. Oh, man, I better not even go there. I'm going way too far. Anyway, take you off on a tangent. I'm known for that. I don't mean to. But anyway, there's something about being regressed where usually they will just let you relax and get, you know, calm you down. I learned all that in Hawaii. That was part of our psychic network and spiritual awakening. And we had a spiritual world network and we combined psychic and spirit. But when we went over to the trade industry in what was that called in New York, and Sean David Morton, what was that, Whole Life Expo in New York, and then we did Whole Life Expo in San Francisco and Seattle, I think, but we were combining them, but they wouldn't let the UFO business in, really. They put them way off, and they had one little group of vendors. They didn't like the UFO people at that time, back in the 80s, were very seldom asked to do spiritual things or Whole Life or type of events where they sold gadgets or health and wellness. Back then, body, mind, spirit groups, Whole Life Expo. So always, the UFOs had taken a long time through events, I guess, to get to be almost non-pseudoscience. But I believe maybe part of my quest is to get that part out there. Now, can you tell me if you have any ET UFO stories of your own?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've got a lot, quite honest with you.
What?
Yeah. I bet, like I said, I told you earlier I've worked with a gentleman not far from where you live at now.
And, okay. It didn't click. He's a UFO person?
Not a UFO. This is all alien. This is all alien related.
Oh, so you're an alienologist?
No, it's kind of part of what I do. Part of being a 14 researcher. I look into, you know, and I've had my own experiences and such. So, you know, I was wondering, Teresa, can we pick this up at another time? Something just came up.
Oh, sure.
I got a message. I got to take care of this.
I appreciate it. I need time, and this is a good time. It's right on the hour. Yeah. So I think we've got an hour. Well, are you okay? Because we've got, what is it, second or third? Did you get a note from Blog Talk?
Yeah.
When is that so we can tell people?
That's supposed to be, tomorrow, I think.
Do you know? Is it 7?
Hold on a minute.
Okay.
Let me pull it up here. I'm looking. Here it is. My computer's always slow on Sundays.
Yeah, mine'll be really slow. I use a laptop.
That's what I use.
Oh, no.
It's tomorrow at 3 p.m. Eastern time.
Oh, really? Are you sure? Is that from the Blog Talk Company? Let me look and see. I just want to make sure, because the girl that does our alien contact shows,
it says from Hangouts.
Hangout. Let's see here. Okay, TJ Morris ET Radio, upcoming broadcast. Lon Strickler, Freudian researcher, author, and publisher, syndicated. Oh, you're right. Oh, I'm glad we talked today. Wow, I wouldn't even have been there. All right, so it's for tomorrow. That was that other booking agency that you got, right?
Right,
that one
right.
Indian. And I don't know how to track that. You had to tell me you were booked and how you booked it. So that was good. All right. Well,
Are you going to call me tomorrow or what?
No, you're on a different station in New York. It's you call three. Can I give you this phone number?
Yeah, hang on a minute.
It's different than this one's mine and your company, ACIR. This is brand new that you're on today. You and I just made it.
Okay.
We're going to put this one on Spreaker ACIR. It'll go on iHeart. Is that okay with you?
I don't care.
Okay, thank you. No, you're starting your own thing with me, ACO Club, just you and me. But I don't know. Well, we got a whole bunch of topics, but we got to figure out how we work together, like you with that MI5 chick. Now, I didn't work for MI5. Do you have restrictions on your...
Yeah, I do. I can only say so much with that. All I can talk about is that I was trained. I can't go beyond that.
Okay, so you're a trained remote viewer. I am too, by the way. All right, so Lon Strickler, folks, he's broadcasting on one of my channels, personal channels. Today is for the ACO Club with American Communications and Allied Command Internet Radio, ACIR Radio. Tomorrow is with Lon Strickler, broadcast paranormal with Blog Talk Radio out of New York for Mr. Levy, but I think he sold it to Vozcast. That is actually recording tomorrow live, 3 p.m., folks. So if you, I'm going to hit Facebook right now. I'm hitting the F for Facebook, and I'll throw it on social media. I'll throw it on Twitter, Lon Strickler. And he is a Fortean researcher, trainer, expert. And I'm going to try to get him to help me run some train the trainer. He doesn't know that yet because I haven't talked to him about it. I guess that's the way the universe works. He knows. I mean, if y'all got any answers,
so you have a number that you need me to call tomorrow?
Yes, sir. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
347-945-7207.
Okay, what are the last four digits again?
7207.
7207. Okay.
3 o'clock. Now that's my time, Central. Are you on Eastern?
I'm at 4 o'clock. So I'll call. You want me to call like 10 minutes before?
It's just you and me. It's a taped thing where they've got music and ACO, a radio out of Revolution Radio.
And how long is the interview?
It's a 2-hour show. It goes by pretty fast, though.
Okay.
It'll be 4 to 6. Now that goes distributed to different places. I don't even have a list, Lon, but I'm going to try to be organized now that I've got time to be, because now I can be more organized, but I'm looking for people like you that have content that want to be more, or be more people. You're looking for a new audience. Well, maybe the same audience to some. We don't know unless we ask them, right? So we're just syndicating. How's that? That sounds good. Let's syndicate. So I'm going to put you out there to people. And folks, just I'm real excited that the universe has provided Lon Strickler for us. And he will be back March. It's tomorrow, March 2nd. And we appreciate it, Lon, for being on the call today. And we look forward. Now, tomorrow we're going to discuss your books, because you'll with our authors club as well, right? And whatever we didn't get into today, whatever you want to talk about. All right.
Okay. No
Thank
problem.
Thank you for helping us today with our club. And I hope you'll look into helping us on whatever you feel an expert at, what you are about. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Lon. Look forward
to you tomorrow.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And I'll send you a copy of this for whatever email I've got on file.
Okay.
Oh, wait,
sounds
I can
good.
Send it when I end this. I can just send you a copy on this Skype.
Okay. Okay.
Thank you
Sounds
so
good.
Much. Thank you. I don't have any music, folks. All right. We're just, this is my online show.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.